And welcome to Greetings from Beyond Radio, ladies and gentlemen. I am your host, Rich Valdez. Before we go any further with our guest, a very special guest and someone that I can actually call a neighbor in Florida, looking forward to meeting with him sometime soon this year. And I think we will be in one of the same events. This is Greetings from Beyond Radio. And as you can see, we are on Spotify, Facebook, YouTube, iHeart, Paralynx. We are on Amazon Music, Podcast Index, Samsung Podcast, Listen Notes, Apple Podcast, wherever any Apple appliances or Apple, you know, technology happens to exist, Google Podcast, and Pandora as well. So you can listen to us on those platforms, and only on a few you can actually see us on. Also, I don't think we have our sponsor page up and ready to be posted yet. We're still working on that because we've had to subtract one or two, and we still have one that we want to add on, but definitely we will be having that next show. A little bit about my guest. I've heard rumblings of him in and out of Florida, and also in Utah, because I spent 6 months in one place, 6 months in another. Hello to all our guests that are already popping in. Thank you, Courtney. Courtney's a dear friend of mine, and if it wasn't for her, the Legion of Exorcists fan page would not be up and running right now. Thank you so much for the help there. She did everything. She did an amazing job. Hey, Jenny, how are you, sweetheart? V. Toretta, De Prana. See, I'm Hispanic, so I can say Di Prana. I hope I said it correctly. I believe that is our guest's lovely wife. And a little bit about our guest. You know, he has actually been in the paranormal field for 35 years. And but he's got this team called the Paranormal Existence Research Society that is pretty much what I like about them is they handle residential cases, which is very rare. We're a dying breed, his team and mine, that is. And it's an unfortunate thing. But it's a good thing to know that there are still teams that will handle residential cases, because that really is the bread and butter of the paranormal field. It's just not researching the paranormal. He also had a little stint there in Devil's Academy. It was a shockumentary that was on Travel Channel last year. There it is for everyone to see, Devil's Academy. And it was ironically about a phenomenon that took place in Miami back in the mid-70s during the satanic panic, as they call it. And he's also has the dubious pleasure of also being a part of the Warren Legacy Foundation. He's a representative for them. And that's quite the honor, because I'm a big fan of the Warrens. If it wasn't for them blazing the trails that they did within the paranormal field, we wouldn't be where we're at today. So with no further ado, help me welcome our guest this evening, Bill Slevin, to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing, Bill? Welcome to the show.
Great. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And by the way, I will also mention that he is, as of, I believe, what, last month?
Yeah.
A parapsychologist. Wow.
Yeah. Finally got my PhD in it's parapsychology and metaphysical humanistic science.
That is awesome.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, say that five times real fast, and let's see how that comes out. Okay, I'm waiting. Let's see. All right. Now. Yeah. I've heard a lot of good things about you. We finally have the pleasure to meet come October of this year at the Psychic Fair. And it's going to be in,
Vermont.
Vermont. Proctor, yeah, Vermont. I almost said Vancouver. I was like, wait a minute, I got to get
you need your passport.
I need my passport now. Yeah, no, it's going to be in Vermont, and that's going to be quite the drive for both of us. I don't know if are you taking a plane or are you driving?
I'm flying up.
You're flying up. Yeah. I'm going to be driving up. Then I got to drive cross country to Utah. That's going to be fun, especially around that time of the year. But I'm right. Looking forward to that. Hopefully we can meet before that, because you and I are neighbors in the state of Florida. How did your team get started? What year did it get started? And what really pushed you into helping more when it came to residential cases versus just doing the, you know, usual commercial locations?
Fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I call them field trips.
Yeah. Well, I actually, my first residential case was in 1989. So I got into them real early. It was something I wanted to do. I wanted to help people, but it was hard to find back then. I've been on many teams. I was originally from New Jersey. So I've been down here in Florida about 23 years now. Mm-hmm. So I started up there. I've been through many teams up there, teams down here. And then I just had enough, honestly, of the in-team fighting, the in-team drama, the just, you know, everybody had to be, they were right. And it was too much. So I said, I'm going to start my own team. And because we do mostly residentials, I'm going to be extremely picky. I formed the team. I originally think it was around 2013, had a couple people I knew on, and then they moved out of here. And then I picked up a few more, and then little by little now, over the last, I would say, 5 years, I've been building the team a lot more. So just, we have people all throughout Florida. I have them on the East Coast, the West Coast. They're in Tampa, West Palm, Miami, Broward. You know, I just picked up a new team member in Naples. And then we also have a team in Georgia, a team in Nebraska, and then in the UK, Italy, and Greece. So we're kind of spread around. Like I said, I'm very picky, though. It's not about, and I'm sure you'll understand this, it's not about you had 25 years in the field, you had 2 years in the field, but what is the compassion of the person, you know, that to be able to help people, to go into their home, to be compassionate, to be, you know, understanding, because a lot of times we don't deal with paranormal, we deal with mental illness, we deal with addiction, we deal with both, you know, and the people have to know how to be able to handle clients and make them feel comfortable. That's stuff that's not as easily learned as learning how to use some equipment or doing, you know what I mean? And I could teach somebody how to investigate, but that's what I look for in people mostly.
Well, you know, I remember one time I had to change doctors. Sure, had his PhD. He was a doctor. He had his practice for, 32 years, but he had crappy bedside manner. And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, when you tell your patient, your brand new patient, first time meeting your patient, you know, after seeing, you know, the blood works come in, and he says, "Oof, I'm surprised you made it to 30.
Yeah, that's...
Excuse me? That's literally what I said. I'm like, what did you just say? These numbers, I've never seen numbers this bad. It'd be a miracle if you made it to next year. I was like, oh my God. What,
yeah,
you have something that you can kill me with now? Because, well, yeah. I mean, that's when I was 30, now I'm 54, and you know,
right.
I say he's number one, if you know what I mean, just forget this finger. I'm trying to be PG here, but there's just some people that don't have people skills. And when you have a team that delves into the paranormal and not only delves into it, you research it. You go out on the field and you test. That's what field trips are for, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, not to do when you're at a residential, but to have at least some one or two people that have good people skills really goes a long way. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, to me, that's what it's all about with this. I mean, look, I've been working in the IT field for over 30 years. And I know a ton about electronics and equipment. I have a ridiculous amount of equipment, but I use about 5% of that in a home. We don't need that in a home. You know, we use audio, video, some environmental stuff, things like that. So it's more about how to deal with the people. And like for the last almost 11 years now, I'm an IT director for a psychiatric drug and alcohol treatment facility.
There you go.
So I've learned a lot about psychiatric illness. One of my team members is a fully licensed psychologist, so she can actually diagnose people. So that's awesome. We have a broad range. I mean, my team, like, that's my lead in Georgia.
I still have to hear from her. You promised me I would hear from her about 2 months ago, and I have not heard anything.
No, we were just talking about that because she came down for MegaCon when we were just at MegaCon, and we were just talking about that. And I said, well, let me go on and do the show with you, and then I got to talk to you about all that.
We actually have a lot of openings, by the way. We've already, I think we have one team in Georgia, but, you know, Georgia, just like Florida, we need so much, you know, people to cover or teams to cover the state of Florida. Right. Georgia, I think we would need at least two, maybe three. I'd love to have her reach out to me after the show if possible. And she says, yes, we need to talk. And yes, we need to talk, young lady. So how many teams do you have spread out throughout the United States? You have Florida, definitely Georgia. Where
Georgia
else?
And Nebraska.
Ooh. I've had to drive through there. My God.
And it's funny. It's a guy, him and his wife, Tom Springer. He has his own podcast too. And he helped me. Like, I've known him for a while. I was on his podcast years ago and we got friendly. And then he actually helped me with a case I had out in Nebraska. Just, I had no idea he was from Nebraska. And I'm going, who do I know in Nebraska to help me with this? Right, I know nobody in Nebraska. And I found out he lived 2 hours from this client, and him and somebody else, the team he was on at the time, they went over to help him, and he was just phenomenal. And because I already knew that there was some illness involved in this. The guy was off medication and things. And he went in there and he helped him because I needed somebody to sit in person with this guy. He needed somebody there to kind of help him. And Tom did such a great job. And when he said that they, you know, separated from the team they were on, I was like, hey, hey, come in here, you know? So that's, you know, and like the Georgia team covers Georgia and the Carolinas, and they'll go a pretty good distance and cover a lot of areas.
That's good to know.
Yeah. And then we have unlimited resources with the Warrens. So,
you know, it's funny. So how did you come across joining the Warren Legacy, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it was about a little over 2 years ago. Happened to come across Chris McKennell, grandson. And for anybody who doesn't know, Chris is the grandson of Ed and Lorraine. Him and Lorraine formed the foundation before she passed on to kind of carry on the legacy of them helping people across the world for free. And I started talking to Chris about something, and I was actually trying to put together a site that can bridge teams across the country, because I used to get so many cases, kind of like you do with things, get so many cases and you don't have a reliable person that you know to pass them on to. And I don't like pushing people away, and I don't like putting them on people I don't know. So he started explaining to me about the foundation because I didn't even know fully about it then. And he's like, you got to come on. So I joined, and then literally, I think it was 90 days later, they made me regional director of the Southeast US. And then within the year, I became one of the three person management team that runs the foundation. So, and we're adjusting things right now. So now I'm covering the entire East Coast and still part of the management team. It's a great, I mean, people don't realize that we understand because we're old school. We know when we have an issue, we reach out to somebody that we might have a question. You know, we don't look at it like, oh, it's some ego problem. We're going to reach out and ask for help if we don't know what we're doing. And that's what's great about my team and about the Warrens, is that we have a million different people on there who are from every type of religion, every type of background, and somebody's going to have the answer if you don't have it. That's what's great about it.
That's one of the reasons I joined Bishop Long when he reached out to me about 14 years ago, asking me to be an administrator for his, at that time, Paranormal Clergy Institute. And little did I know he was also looking to mentor me if I needed mentoring, although I had already had mentoring when it came to demonology through another church, and I was still working for that other church at the time. I was not familiarized until I met Bishop Long when it came to doing things the Catholic way. I was more familiar with the non-denominational Christian way of doing things, which is more liberation. We never, you know, studied exorcisms or anything, and not that I did with Bishop Long, just to the extent of demonology. And it was not that easy of a transition, because there's things that you learn in one and learn in the other. Exactly. It's different way of doing things. But what I did appreciate about the Paranormal Clergy Institute is the fact that they were willing to work with paranormal teams. That's why it's called Paranormal Clergy. It doesn't mean that the team itself has to have someone of clergy in it.
Right.
Clergy works with the paranormal in order to gain information and data from a person that believes there to be something demonic. Maybe.
Yeah.
And as you and I both know, the probability of something being demonic is the probability of you winning the lottery, you know, four times in 1 month in the state of Florida. It's not going to happen. You know, I mean, unless you have a formula that no one knows about, you're going to be a sought after individual. So that's what we've been doing as of late, is expanding and expanding and expanding. And I'm very appreciative of Eclectic Redhead. I can't recall her name. I'm sorry.
Stephanie.
Because there's been Stephanie. Thank you. Reaching out when she did. We're still looking. Ironically, we have cases in, we have a case waiting in Arkansas. We have a case in Illinois and now Virginia. So there's three regions right there that need coverage, and we don't have coverage there yet. There's been many that reached out when Bishop first put that out. And, you know, Bishop can be very sneaky, because he didn't tell me he was going to do this. When he posted this, I was like, what are you doing? Next thing you knew, I got bombarded, and I was busy enough as it was that everybody wanted to join. I'm like, hey, calm down. Do you feel that people are like that when it comes to the Warren Legacy as well?
Both my team and the Warren Legacy. I get my team alone, I probably get, I don't know, a handful of people trying to join a week at least, especially if we do an event. When we do an event, everybody comes up, meets us, talks to us, and we're the type of people, we talk to everybody. You know, we'll sit there and talk to you for an hour at the booth. We don't care. We're there to help. And everybody wants to join. And, you know, I tell them, I said, look, go to the site, fill out the form. I'm not always taking everybody on, and we're extremely picky, and it's nothing personal. It's what we need. You know, I need to make sure also they're going to get along with everybody on my team, because I don't want drama on the team. And it's the same thing with the Warrens. Warrens actually a little more, because people just want to join because of the Warrens, you know, and they want the name, or they want the credit behind them, or they want to be part of it, you know, and it's, you gotta be selective.
I am an even bigger fan, dare I say, of John Zaffis. And not too many people know that John Zaffis was actually the nephew of Ed and Lorraine Warren. And I've always gotten along with him. I call him boss. He has been my mentor on and off, but a dear friend of mine. And the stories that he has shared on my show and in person have been amazing when it comes to his uncle, Ed. And have you ever met the Warrens, and have you ever met John Zaffis?
Unfortunately, no on all of them. I know who John Zaffis is. I had him on, where I'm on Facebook with him and stuff. And I do a lot with Joe Frankie, who worked with Ed and Lorraine for 36 years. He was one of their first students, and he's, you know, he knows Johnny very well. And I've heard a lot of great things. I don't think I've ever heard a bad thing about John. he's just one of those people everybody loves. Same thing with Joe. Joe is great. Joe just came down. He came down from Connecticut for MegaCon with us. And because I was a guest there and I had a huge area. So we brought him down. I had my Georgia team came down and we all had a great time. But unfortunately, I wish, you know, I'm from New Jersey. And so many times when I was younger, they were lecturing up, you know, in Connecticut area and stuff. And I don't know why I never went and met them. To this day, I still don't understand why I never did when I was so close.
I really wish I actually had three opportunities. But the drive alone, I was thinking, God, that's too long of a drive. But when you drive from Miami to Utah,
yeah,
man, Connecticut is just around the corner. Because if I knew then what I know now.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about the appearance you had on Devil's Academy and that one particular case. What was your I saw the shockumentary. I think that's what they call it. Shockumentary.
Shock doc. Yeah.
Shock doc. Yeah. And how did you feel your contribution to the story as to what happened in this Devil's Academy, as they like to call it, but the what happened, I believe it was 1975, if I'm not mistaken.
79.
Okay, yeah. I'm way off. Okay. All right. So 1979.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, being on TV yourself, how things change as it goes. First of all, they filmed that 3 years prior. I didn't even know it was airing. I didn't even know what the name of it was until somebody posted a picture of me on the show. They brought me in, and the thing was, you've seen the show, so there's two sides to this story.
Good job, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. There was a lot. I mean, they filmed me for hours, but they pick and chose. And at the time, it was just me and I think one other person. And then I think they needed to just alter it slightly. And they added a couple more people to it. And they had a little more information. But, you know, it's interesting because it's one of those where there's kind of two sides to the show. So, you know, half the world says, listen, these were kids that were being, you know, abused and tortured in this school, and they just decided to act out and go crazy and cause a scene. Mm-hmm. And then there's the side that says, you know, this was a possible mass possession of the school because they were having them play with Ouija boards and they were having them do tarot cards and hypnosis and Santeria, and they were just not teaching them, just letting them do whatever. And it just, that reaction that day where the girl was hypnotized, and you know, the thing is, yeah, it could have been kids acting out at one point, but from the eyewitness accounts of certain things, it's hard to only take that side, because when a kid jumps out, look, there's a lot of things that can happen, superhuman strength at times, you know, but when a kid jumps through or actually gets thrown through a second floor window, lands on the concrete, and the security guard comes up to him and he gets up. He doesn't have a scratch on him. And he picks up the security guard and throws him across the parking lot. That's, to me, that's a little more than acting out, you know. the girl levitating off the floor in the bathroom saying that the devil was in her. You know, these are the things that were raising that side. They were ripping doors. Kids were just ripping doors off the hinges in the building. And, you know, so I don't know. I wish it was something that had happened, you know, a lot later, because there'd be cameras. You know, there was no cameras back then. There was no nothing, and you didn't know what was going on. But some of those eyewitnesses they had, too, was like, I think the police chief and the fire chief and everything that were on call at that time. And they had some pretty interesting, you know, things to say about it.
It sounds like mass hysteria. And dare I quote Bill Murray from Ghostbusters, you know, mass hysteria, dogs lying down with lions and this and that. But, you know, like you said, there was no security cameras back then. We would have to basically go off of eyewitness accounts and people testifying to what, you know, could potentially have happened. I find it nowadays when everything, because, you know, let's face it, you know, this nowadays, that kind of eliminates the possibility of did it or did it happen. And then you have you yourself are a tech guy. Yeah. That can actually be changed with Photoshop and a lot of, you know, different programs that we can get on computers. Back then, yeah, it's kind of hard to debate that because, you know, was the person telling the truth? Was this exaggerated? Was this drug induced? Was this, who really knows?
Right.
Until you really start getting down to the middle of it. But I was wondering how your experience went. Mine was all over the place. I swear, that was a marathon, and I didn't know anyone in there other than Bishop Long. Everyone else I was on the show. We literally met the day that we arrived at the hotel. The next day, we were filming from 7:30 a.m. all the way to 6:30 p.m. And very little breaks in between. So it was like crunch time. Mm. And but you know, since they had, you said they had you waiting 3 years before all of a sudden it just appeared out of nowhere.
It was funny because when we filmed it, I started putting it on my bio, and when I was doing lectures and stuff, I said, you know, I filmed a show. I can't say what it is yet. You know how that is. I said it's going to be for Travel Channel and Discovery Plus. I didn't even say it was a shock doc. That's what they told me. And I got to the point where the next year I was like, supposed to be sometime next year, they told me. Then it got to the point where I was saying, it's sometime, I don't know. And then I was about to take it off because I said, I guess they just, I kept contacting them. They don't even respond to you. I thought they just killed it. And then all of a sudden there it was. I had no idea what the name of it was. And they added, see, I think what happened was, is that they went too far on both sides of it. I mean, they brought me in for, as like a demonology specialist and talking about what I thought about this stuff. And I think they needed a little more horror to it. When I was brought on, it was me, and they told me they had one guy who was an exorcist who I assume was Bob Larson. And then, I'm just saying on the show. That's what they told me. So I assumed when I saw it, that's who they were talking about. But then I know afterwards, they must have added a lot of stuff because they got a lot more info that I didn't even know about that's on that show. And that's when they added Michael Salerno, and then the other guy who they had that was kind of like hosting it or whatever he was doing. But, you know, so they added a little. I think they added a little more to it. I think that's why it took so long, you know.
I had been asked a question on one of the interviews. Is that what really happened when you know your story was told on the Legion of Exorcists? And I said, actually, there was about I'd say it was a 2-hour story, but you know, being as you saw the format of the show, they'd give, you know, one half. Of the show was, you know, to one story and the other half was to another story.
Right.
The reality behind it is it took us about 2 to 2.5 hours to tell the story of what happened with detail. They edited everything down to about, I'd say, and I'm not counting the commercials, 13 minutes, give or take. And I was like, this is insanity. And when I found out that they had actually decided to split it that way, you really don't have any control. All you are is a cast member. They're asking you for your true account, a story as to what happened. And that's what they came up with. Were there exaggerations in the recreations? Of course there was. There's nothing you could do to stop Hollywood from doing that. They have freedom of license to do whatever they feel is going to bring in people to watch it. But you know, let's just say that's a live and learn experience for me when it comes to the show I was a cast member of and the show that you were on as well. I also learned that the first time out in a haunting. But you know, live and learn, that's how it goes along.
I was on back in 2016 or 15. I was on an episode of Ghost Asylum, and I was at the beginning. What it was is they were doing a show up at the Castillo de San Marcos Ford up in St. Augustine.
Okay.
And they contacted me because they saw something I had posted online about what I captured in my experiences at the fort. So I came up and I was talking. We interviewed for a little bit. They filmed me for a bit out there up in St. Augustine. And, you know, even the producers sometimes don't have all the say from, I guess, the executive producers or whatever it is, because I told them, they were talking to me. They said, okay, what, you know, how do you want your name listed and all this stuff? And I said, just put me down as a paranormal investigator, because as long as I'm getting the professional credit of what I do, you know, sure enough, it pops up and there's my name and it says local resident. And I'm like, first of all, yes, I was like, come on. Now, first of all, I don't live in St. Augustine. And second of all, that just sounds like some guy with a ghost story around the corner. You know, I was like, come on. And they cut out a lot of it. I mean, they cut out a lot of it.
let me take a guess. They interviewed you for 4 hours and they only put 5 minutes in.
Pretty much. Well, it was about, I was there about 2.5 hours. And you know, doing everything. And it was surprising because the main thing was about an actual photo I captured at the fort. That was the main thing that they brought me up there for. They had me bring copies of the photos, had me sign releases, and then they never used that. So I have no idea. You have no idea what they're going to do when you do it.
You have no control over it. And that's something that I've had many people say, is that the way it really went down? I'm like, no, that's really not the way it went down. I mean, I got no control over what Hollywood does.
Right.
And people need to realize that a lot of times they do tend to exaggerate things a lot. And and whatever they decide, when they tell you, hey, the episode or the show or episodes that you're on, it's going to air. You're like, and then you watch and you're like, that's not how, but what? So, you know, that's the way it happens. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I also remember, you know, talking with Chris McKennell. One of his cases back when he was younger was a haunting in Connecticut. He lived with that family for, I think, 9.5 weeks. And he said when they all came to them, I guess, about this, you know, the movie and the book and all that, they told them exactly what happened. And he said that the main story about, I think it was the kid had cancer and they bought the house over there closer to the thing. He said that was all true. And it was an old funeral home, I think, and all that.
Yes.
He said everything else was not anything to do with the actual story. And he said the actual story was far more horrific than what actually happened in that movie.
Yes.
So
yes,
they do whatever they want, you know. They're going to do what they think will sell.
And you know what's funny? They steer away from what will sell if they were to stick to the truth.
Yeah.
Versus what they think will sell, and it doesn't. And here's the funny part. I'm very dear friends with Andrea Perrone. And as you know, Andrea Perrone and her family were the inspiration behind what people know now as the Conjuring House.
Right.
Now, what if you were to read her book? And let me tell you, I've spent plenty of time with this woman. I remember she invited me to stay with her for about 2 nights. We just hung out. We made lunch. We made dinner. We talked. Oh my goodness, Bill! Let me tell you something. Things she actually didn't put in the book. You things that you thought she did, but the little in between things were more terrifying than what you saw in the movie. And that in itself to me amazes me that Hollywood would not add that in there. I'm like, what's wrong with Hollywood nowadays?
Right.
I think they've left too much to the writers that know nothing about the paranormal or supernatural. Yeah. And they think they do because they're going off of this was popular back in the 1980s, 90s, and early 2000 and on. I honestly think, and hey, maybe you're on board with me, maybe you're not. I think the real stories are more terrifying than what they glitter Hollywood glitter with. And right. if they were to stop for one single minute and give it a chance.
Right. No, absolutely. You know? I believe that shows like, say, you know, Ghost Hunters, Ghost, you know, Adventures, those type of things, they can't go full on like what we do because, you know, we've how many times have been to a place for 10, 12 hours and captured absolutely nothing, you know, so that's definitely nobody's going to watch that. I mean, we might because we're used to it. But
I don't watch the shows anymore, honestly. Yeah. My girlfriend does, but I pretty much just go,
I'm okay with them because I know they're entertainment, you know, so I don't mind. But I tell people the hardest thing we have to deal with as residential investigators is convincing somebody they are not haunted. That's the hardest thing.
That is true. That is true.
They don't want to believe us. You know, they want to believe the people they see all the time on TV and the internet. And those are the people they believe are the true experts in the field because
they want to believe their own narrative. Yeah. And oftentimes they just want to be in an echo chamber of finding whoever is going to believe with their story and their version of what happened. The times that if I had a dime for every time that a person has contacted me and they say, I'm possessed or this is demonic. Well, if you're so convinced of it, why are you contacting a demonologist?
Right.
And then what surprises me is not that. What really surprises me is after I go through everything, listening to what they have to say, conduct an investigation, testing, you name it.
Right.
And I tell them, I got great news. It's not demonic. It's almost like telling someone that is convinced they have stage 4 cancer of whatever.
Right.
And I'm an oncologist and I'm telling them, I got great news for you. It's not cancer. It's gas.
Right.
You're fine. You're fine. And you would think the person would be like, oh, thank God it's not cancer.
Right.
It's just gas. No. Instead, they're like, you're wrong. It's a demon. I'm like, excuse me? No, it's not. No, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm the demonologist. What the hell are you? So it's like, you know, we have to think honestly.
Yeah.
What are people digging for? I would like to know, and I'm sure you've had this, how many people have come to you already convincing themselves this is a haunting or this is demonic? And then when you tell them it's your ice maker making the noise or it's EMF radiation from your alarm clock that's making you feel this way, or it's not demonic, and they tell you you're wrong. How does that make you feel? I mean, be honest with me, Bill. Come on.
Yes.
Let it out. Come on, Bill.
It's a lot. It is a lot. I mean, what she's talking about right there is somebody we had literally a couple weeks ago that went off on us. I mean, just lost her mind and even sent us emails saying that we're fake and I'm full of crap. And, you know, like it's...
There's we should be millionaires, Bill.
it's all the time. It really is. Like you said, we do get a lot of clients so that are very good. And when you tell them, they are relieved. I mean, that's the whole thing. When you tell somebody it's not something, you know, and they look at you like, well, you're wrong, or I know it is, or it's like, I'm going, you should be relieved what I'm telling you. You know, you should be relieved.
And from Gregory Duhamel, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. I cannot stand the folks who are too caught in religion that it clouds their judgment on things. Your feelings on this, and then I'll chip in my 2 cents.
Yeah, I mean, it's if depending on their religion and how far out on that religion they are, will definitely cloud their judgment, because if they're told, especially by maybe a priest or somebody that they respect religiously, and they tell them that it's a demon or somebody gave them a deliverance or something like that, they are never ever going to believe you, because that's fully what they believe. It's clouded that we have people like that. clouded their judgment 100% on believing other people. Even people like, okay, I'm Catholic and I'm dealing with people who are Catholic and that's what they're believing. But even me telling them that, they still don't like it. You know, it's almost like a different type of attachment. Some of them want it. You know, it's like
they want the cancer.
Yeah, it's like a codependency on it. You know,
exactly. You know, to answer this gentleman's question, I know where he's coming from. Being that I got involved in the paranormal field, I'd say a good 2-3 years before I got into demonology. As time went on and I started realizing, because you get to see both sides, there's more between heaven, earth, and hell that we do not understand. And we can't say that everything is black or white. There's a huge gray. And being involved in the paranormal, and I've often referred to myself as the Swiss Army knife of the paranormal field, because I pretty much have, I'm not an expert in everything, but I have my hand in just about everything. Let's not get into the expert thing, Bill. I know how you feel about it. All right, chill.
I think there are experts. I'm full on that there are experts in it.
But you know, I understand where this gentleman Gregory's coming from, because I've seen it too many times. People will see that I have demonologist attached to my title. They tend to forget that I'm also a paranormal researcher and investigator. I don't believe everything is demonic. I don't believe anything is satanic panic. We need to dismiss all other possibilities. There could be a plethora of them. There could be EMF radiation sickness, which I'm sure you've heard of, and it can cause rashes. It can cause hallucinations. It can cause sleeplessness. It can cause so many things. I've solved at least 2 cases in my time that involved electromagnetic field. Yeah. Radiation sickness.
I had a big one.
Oh man, I'm telling you. And when you have that the power box right behind your wall, and you're getting like your needle is being buried, and you're like, what the hell's going on? What's going on? Then you look behind and you're like, oh, that's why this person is so sick. People don't understand what EMF radiation is, but they don't even want to know. They don't even want to hear that.
They just know yes, no on the K2.
Oh God, don't take me on the K2. That is a rabbit hole.
There's a lot of rabbit holes here, but no, yeah. I had a case in New Jersey. It was in the early 90s, and so it was a lot different. We didn't have a lot of equipment and we didn't have certain things. And we went in there, this family, they were seeing all types of things. They were getting nauseous, headaches, all kind of stuff. We went in there 3 times and we got nothing, like as far as, you know, paranormal, nothing, but wanted to help them. Kept trying everything. Finally, I said, you know what? I called one of my friends who was an electrician and he had some devices I didn't have at the time. And we went in there and we went downstairs into the basement and on their electrical box. Holy cow. I have never seen so much EMF in my life. And he said that something was wrong with that wiring. It wasn't shielded. We explained it to them. They had to spend a lot of money. They weren't thrilled about that. But because it was a lot, they did it. Everything stopped. So what they were getting is that from that EMF, they were getting hallucinations. They were getting nausea. They were getting, you know, everything you could think of. And people don't think of stuff like that because, you know, if you tell them we're seeing things, it's just like I tell people how dangerous it is to go in and do a residential if you don't know things outside of the paranormal. If you learn from watching Ghost Adventures, okay, that's fine because that's what's on now, you know, but don't go into a person's home until you worked with somebody with that, because if that person is schizophrenic and you don't know it or they don't know it and you tell them that, okay, they're hearing voices, they're seeing things. So a person who doesn't know any better is going to be like, holy crap, there's a ghost in here, you know? And next thing you know, they're cleansing the home, but your cleansing is not going to cleanse his illness. No. And now when you leave, he now still has the voices and now thinks they're going to kill him because now it's something you told him was paranormal. So now you messed him up even more, you know?
Exactly.
So there's a lot of things like that. Yeah.
That in itself is the rabbit hole. That's something that, you know, not too many people realize. And I actually didn't coin this phrase. Someone told me this years ago. We've become paranormal investigators, researchers have become more therapists than anything else. And you need to know what you're talking about. You need to know all the possible venues that rabbit hole can take the client and your team down. EMF radiation sickness. I'm sure this is possibly the first time many of these listeners and viewers have even heard that. If you guys are not aware of what it is, please ask in the chat room, and Bill and I will gladly answer that. By the way, Bill, before I go any further, the show is 1 hour and a half, but the half is really for my POD, which is points of discussion, which I talk with the rest of the chat room. But if you want to stay on for a half hour more, that's up to you. I'll leave that up to you. You can say, or
yeah, okay. I'm fine.
You're good with that. Okay, cool. We'll still take a break and then we'll come back after that. But you know, there's EMF radiation sickness. There's mental health issues that people need to bear in mind. There's a vast questionnaire. Oh my goodness, the questionnaires that we need to fill out when it comes to not only the paranormal clergy, but also my team as well, the paranormal consulting agency. Those are things that are so important, and it's not it's not in an attempt to shame the client. It's in an attempt for us to help. Oftentimes, there have been many cases where a person is seriously mentally ill. They have not been taking their medication.
Yes.
And they are already in deep that rabbit hole. And there have been times where I've had to tell them, look, due to the fact that you have just admitted to me that you haven't taken your medication in quite some time, we really need to think about, you know, how we're going to approach this. Yeah. And that in itself is mega. We really need to think that and take that under consideration.
We tell them, some people, and this is where they get mad, we'll tell them sometimes, hey, you know, in order to continue this case with you, because they're exhibiting things that we think could be something, we can't diagnose them, we can't tell them, you know, we'll tell them we need you to get a full psychiatric evaluation and a full medical evaluation. Agreed. And some of them will do it, and some of them get really pissed, and they don't understand that if they come back to us and they go, oh, I was diagnosed with schizophrenia, they think we're going to go, okay, well, you're crazy, so that's the problem. No, it can be both. No. But if you don't have the illness under control, we can't pull out the paranormal side of it. You need to have that controlled. Same thing with addiction. If you're a raging addict, you know, we need to know that, because it's going to be hard to know what you're seeing reality versus, you know, versus the addiction. So it's just something that can be both, but you know, getting them to tell you that is tough. That's where you have to have the right people to get them comfortable with you. And we never expose anybody.
It's not in an attempt for us to shame the person.
Right.
It's in an attempt for us to actually gauge and get a better understanding of what else may be going on here. Okay, so we have a question from the chat room. I'm going to go ahead and pop this up. And it states, from Gregory, what do you guys think about the Sumerian stories, interdimensional time travelers? Okay, well, that's two questions right there, Gregory. So we're going to have to take this one at a time. I would love to hear your views. I'm good friends with Carl Johnson, who is also a demonologist, and have had a few chats with him about that. Always interested in hearing from others about it. You first.
That one, I don't have a lot of information. that is not in my normal realm. I mean, interdimensional time travelers. I mean, I believe it's possible. I don't believe the ones on TikTok.
TikTok level.
But you could go on this one. I don't have a lot.
Okay, here's my take on it. Anything is possible within the supernatural and the paranormal field. Yeah. There's theories that run abound, and we need to realize that we don't have all the answers. This is why we do what we do, be it demonology, be it through, which is theological, by the way. Theology, demonology have nothing to do with the paranormal. Let's separate the two. There are theories, there's theology, there's paranormal theories, there are scientific methodologies that are applied when it comes to paranormal investigation, but there are also many theories unproven still. Until we actually have Bigfoot, all right? Now, I'm talking, you know, Bigfoot himself, you know, eating, you know, beef jerky next to me on the show and going, rrr, 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 you know, and answering questions as we go along. We really won't have all the answers when it comes to interdimensional creatures or time travelers. I think it's anything is possible. There is looping. Where it's called, you know, residual haunts, where there's really no intelligence involved, but it seems to be the same thing happening over and over again from a certain time to a certain time. That has to be somewhere along the lines of interdimensional time traveling, but I would say more along the lines of energy that's trapped in one particular area. Yeah. And I think that is very possible.
Yeah, I used to explain to I had a client that, you know, had it was an old house up in Ridgewood, New Jersey, and, you know, old creaky house. And they said I forget how old those houses were, but they said, you know, every night at like 5 o'clock, they would hear footsteps going up the stairs. And I explained to him, I said, that's residual, because we went in there and we checked. And it's something where maybe 100 years ago in that house, that guy came home from work at 5 o'clock every day. He trekked up the stairs to go get changed, to get ready for dinner or whatever. That energy footprint is still there and just running through time. Or there's a lot of people that believe that can be an interdimensional thing too. But I've encountered, from what I believe I encountered, it was more on a residual energy. But like you said, there's so much out there we don't know. You know, until
we don't. And there's so many studies I'd like to answer our producer, but I need to know the timing that we have here. Jen, how much time do we have left before we go to our first break? Maybe she's on. Maybe she's not. I don't know. So I'm going to answer this Sumerian stories such as Noah and 2 minutes. 2 minutes left. Okay, so I guess I will have to answer that really after we come back from our break. No, that's fine, Gregory. Don't worry about that. And you know what? I'll answer that. And I'm sure, Bill, if you want to, you know, jump in when we come back from the break. Because being a demonologist, you can't just study the Bible. You have to study all other religions, all other faiths. And as far, I hate to call them religions, but let's face it, that's what we call them. My faith is Christian faith. It's Christian based. I try not to discriminate. I think everyone has a right to believe in what they wish to believe in. But absolutely, to be honest with you, and as you can see, Bill agrees with me there, we need to be open-minded. This is really what is missing nowadays in the paranormal field. And this is something that we will address. I know that our producer said 2 minutes left. But you know what? Let's take a break now so that we actually have some time to go into this a little bit further and answer some more questions that may come into the chat room. So don't go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen, because when we come back, we will have our special guest, Bill Slevin, my neighbor from Florida, and we will be discussing a little bit more about anything and everything, especially things that go bump in the night. Lots of fun. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after these few short words from our sponsors. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Greetings from Beyond Radio, ladies and gentlemen. We have with us Bill Slevin. We've had so much brought up the first hour of the show, but one thing I definitely want to get to before we go any further, what are going to be the, you know, next up and coming events that you're going to be attending, your team, you and your team, in the rest of 2024, if you don't mind mentioning that, if you have it off the top of your head, or maybe you got to refer to a list, who knows?
I have a lot that aren't confirmed yet, so I don't know. There's still a lot of things aren't confirmed. We do a lot of, especially toward Halloween and everything, we do a lot of libraries down here in Broward and Miami, and those are different than, like, when I do a convention, I'm usually brought in as a guest, and then I speak, depending on the size of the show. Sometimes we do multiple shows, but when we do a library, it's different. Because it's not 45 minutes. We'll usually go about 3 hours. And we really, I'll have a bunch of my team there with me. And we really do, we entertain them a little bit with things. We'll show some evidence, but we're really educating them on what's real, what's not. We'll tell some of the stories, some of the places we've been. So I always say, look out for those, especially around here. Right now, the only thing I have 100% confirmed is Vermont in October. I have a few other things that I'm taking a little bit of a break right now too, because I just finished January was like every weekend. February I had a bunch of things, and now I'm trying to finish my book. So in the next couple, hopefully next like 2 months, I want to have it done, and then working with publisher and stuff. So I want to get that out as soon as possible.
He has a book coming out. ladies and gentlemen, in case you were all wondering. I'm not going to ask the name. I'm sure that's going to be something that you're going to want to announce in your own time when it's ready.
It's going to be about my life in the paranormal. It's 100% real, you know, from how I started, cases I was involved in, you know, and a little bit of everything. It's going to be a very real book. On the only thing that's not real in the book are names, because I got to change names, you know, because everything's confidential. But it's a guide through my journey through this. I say actively investigating 35 years, but I mean, I started seeing things and experiencing things a lot younger, but it was about 35 years now that I've been actively investigating. So
what was your first official experience, paranormal experience, personal paranormal experience? Or am I, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Am I kind of giving it away when it comes to
your book? No. Okay. I've talked about a lot of stuff before. Well, it's a couple things. First, I'm an empath. Okay. I didn't know what that was back then. Nobody talked about that. You know, and again, being raised Catholic, if I brought up something about empath, I'm seeing things or feeling things or whatever, they would all thought I was crazy. But all I knew is, like, even when I was little and I would go to, like, even family parties, because people don't understand that's both living and dead. You know, I can feel energy and emotions. So I would go to, like, a family party, and all of a sudden I'd be like, why am I so depressed? You know, it wasn't me. I was picking it up from somebody else, but it took many, many years before I learned what that was. You know, that was some of the things that started me questioning. But there was the one story I like to talk. I talk about it a few times. It's paranormal, in my opinion, absolutely paranormal. It's not something I physically saw, but when you were, you know, this was in the 80s, everybody had the haunted house on their block. You know, oh, that haunted that house was crazy. We don't like to go by there. Kids would run past it. You know, I was more trying to see how I get in. You know, that was how I was back then. But there was this house on the corner of where I lived in Fort Lee, New Jersey. And in the yard, there was this big, giant mound. It was, you would say about the size of, like, a coffin. It was a big, round mound on the thing. It had all grass on it, and it had flowers all through it. I thought maybe it was some kind of memorial, something. You see it there all the time. But at least once or twice a year, you would see them level it, put grass seed down, and it would grow, and it would be normal, just normal grass in the yard. And then I tell you, not even a month later, you would walk by one day and boom, there it was with all the flowers. And it used to just baffle me at what the hell was going on, you know? And one time, and we're talking about, I was like 10, and we're walking by and everybody runs by because the old guy who lived there was actually outside working, digging the thing up and taking it down. And I'm going in. I went in the yard and I went up to him and I asked him, I said, hey, I said, I have a question. And he just looked at me like so, like, exhausted, you know? And I go, why do you keep digging that up if you're putting it right back? He looked at me and I could see that he didn't know how to answer. And he goes, we don't put it back. It just comes back. And, you know, I was like 10 or 11. I'm looking at him like, okay, maybe he is crazy. I'm like, what are you talking about? And he said, look, he goes, we dig this thing up. We tear it down. We put grass seed. The grass grows over. He goes, and then we wake up one morning and it's back. And then we.
Overnight.
And it'd be, as a kid, you don't notice. All of a sudden it was there again, you know, but he said it would overnight. They'd wake up and it would be there. And he could never explain it. I started doing some research even at a young age. I went to the library, pulled up some stuff, and it was Indian land there. And there's a possibility it was where they had a chief buried. So I don't know why I've never gone back now and done the actual research, because I'd like to follow up on that. But it was something that kind of made me start looking more into things when I saw something like that, because this guy, the look on his face was just like, he didn't know what to say. He was exhausted. He was just, I don't think he understood what was going on, you know? So that's like some of the things, like, you know, at that age, things like that we had to do, and then go research, go to a library and start looking through things, because you couldn't go talk to many people about it, you know?
You know,
what helped me.
Kids nowadays don't understand what you and I had to go through back in the day to research things.
Right. Because
they got Google. It's all, you know, on the phone nowadays. And I remember the days I had to go to my public library, which was what I'd say 2 blocks from where I lived, had to cross a busy intersection. But regardless, I'd spend hours and hours just... I was a bookworm, and, and mind you, this is before I had to wear these just to read. You know, I was able to read just fine, and I'd get home like 3-ish after school, and I'd get there around 3:45, something like that. I was there till close, believe it or not. And we had no cell phones back then, so my mom couldn't call me. And I just tell her the truth. I'm going to the library to do some research, which was correct. It was spot on. And, you know, using the cards just to find the books, and then have to go to either the downstairs catalog. Or the card catalog. They had a name. Was it the something Dewey?
The Dewey system? Decimal System.
Dewey Decimal System, exactly. And I remember going through all the cards and trying to find the book, and then I'm like, oh, great. And I'd go there and I couldn't find it. And that was the most frustrating thing, because it had been checked out. I'm like, who the hell checks out this book? But whatever. Okay. You know, and then I'd wait a week or two, and then it was back. Nowadays, we got it made, Bill. All we got to do is just pull it up on our phone or on our computer, and we're good to go. We got the information at the touch of our little fingers. And the funny thing is that the amount of hours that went into researching, I was just happy to know that once I started my team, I could actually designate someone to do all that research for me, because I didn't feel like doing it anymore. I'm getting too old for this crap, you know. Even though I still love researching, but not that much. My collection of books could actually rival that of a public library. So your team is vast. I've seen pictures of your team when you guys go to these conventions and you have your table set up and everything. I think I've counted as many as 10 at one time.
Team members?
In a picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
And is it 10 or more, or is there more just others that couldn't make it?
It's there's about 23 altogether.
Holy crap. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
There's about 23 altogether. It's whoever could come. Like when we have, sometimes I can't, sometimes they just bring me in as a guest and I have a table, you know, with like autographs and things like that and whatever. Sometimes I don't have the setup. Like MegaCon is just amazing to us. We had about 70, 80 feet of space. You know, I had Joe Frankie came down from Connecticut. He had a table. I had a table. I had 3 tables for my team. So there we had about 5 or 6 from Florida. All 3 of my team from Georgia came down. My wife's also on my team now. She doesn't investigate, but she works. She's an energy worker and an energy healer. So she'll work with some of the clients if we need energy work. So she, you know, and then she has to fix me when I'm all messed up all the time. But, you know, but besides that, she doesn't really like the investigating part of it. But, yeah, we got a good group of people spread all over. And I would love, when we have certain events, I tell them all, if you could all come, everybody come. It makes it tough when we do panels. And
even Beth Allen there, our para thug herself, love you, hun, says that's a huge team. I have to agree. I mean, you have literally, I would say, the equivalency of what, 5 teams in one? Mm-hmm. If you think about it, because holy crap. I mean, that's a lot of people, but you know, it can also come in handy, especially in regions and different areas as well.
And that's the thing. Now we do our initial interviews are now done by Zoom. We started that around, you know, COVID, and that's how the Warren do it also. So we started using that, and it comes in handy because that initial interview where we're spending 2 hours on the phone, you know, on Zoom with these people, I don't have to have just the people that are local to that case. I can have some of my extremely gifted people from Georgia, from Nebraska, be on the original call to help with things originally. And then if we need to go there, then the people who are local, we go over to the house, you know, so it does come in handy. It really does.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Nebraska, and my producer and I have had to drive through. I have to drive through Nebraska in order to get to Utah and from Utah back to Miami. Right. We have a saying for Nebraska that I really can't say on the air right now, but that is the one of the longest, I mean, width wise, not, you know, but holy crap, it goes on forever and ever. And it's just corn after corn after corn. I can understand why children of the corn get lost in the cornfields, because it goes on forever.
And yeah. And the Nebraska team actually has a pretty wide range of area too, because I don't want to quote this, but I believe he's up in a northeast corner. So he can easily within a couple hours get to like three different states. So he's covering a big area too. You know, we'll go a pretty good distance for, you know, somebody, like I said, Georgia covers, you know, North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, they'll go through everywhere. So we will cover most places. If it's some place I don't think I have somebody to cover, I then take the case and put it through to the Warrens, which I'll probably still be, you know, part of it. But at least we have people in the local area.
I may have to apply for the Warren Legacy myself, because foundation, because it's gotten to the point to where there's so many people that are reaching out, and we don't have enough coverage yet.
Yeah.
Through the paranormal clergy, and little by little we're getting there. As you know, Bishop Long, and I told you he's sneaky, you know, he posted that post about 2 months ago, and I was bombarded. I was like, wait, hold on, I don't have that many fingers in or hands, and I can't grow another hand, I'm not a mutant. So I may have to actually check in on that when it comes to the Warren Legacy Foundation, because if they have that much reach, it would actually help. Because one of the things that I think is missing from the paranormal field, and I think you and I agree on this very, very much so, is the human element. Hello to Joanne and everyone else that's been on. By the way, I'm sorry I'm being rude. It's just that Bill and I have gotten so engaged in talking about the paranormal and do's and don'ts and whatnot. But do you feel that there's been a break from the human element and taking care of individuals that are actually dealing with something they don't understand and are seeking answers? Do you feel that the paranormal field has actually broken away from the human element more towards the side of just the thrill of investigating an abandoned location?
It has, mostly because they're not people like us who learned before shows were around. They learned from watching the TV shows. So, and I'm not saying that's bad, but they learn from watching Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, and what they see are them going into abandoned locations and going crazy with all the equipment and running and screaming and, you know, all different things. And that's fine for people who want to go out to the local building or the cemetery or whatever. A lot of them don't see that side of it from TV. Even on some shows that do have some residentials, it's done very different. It's not done like we would do it. And it is causing some issues in there, because everybody wants to go and they just want to find something. They're not interested in research. They're not interested in helping people. And I'm not saying everybody. I'm saying some of them aren't interested. You know how many cases I've gotten where, when one of the questions, I have a very long form that people got to fill out, you know, to request an investigation. Part of it is because if you fill out that form, I know you're serious already. because it's pain in the ass. But if, you know, the problem is a lot of these people, I've gotten cases where they come to us and one of the questions says, have you had a team investigate ever? And the ones that say yes, a lot of them will tell us they came in, they told us we had a portal, we had a demon, we had this, and then they left. And that was it.
No solution.
Right. So that's not, people don't understand, that's a ghost hunter.
Yeah.
That's where I determine the difference between a ghost hunter and a paranormal investigator. You know, they're just looking, it's an amateur thing where they're looking to, like you said, a thrill, to go find a ghost. Everybody wants to have that capture. Everybody wants to get that cool picture, that cool video, whatever. They don't realize how hard it is to get a real one, but they want to capture it. And they don't really care in helping the families or you know, the people involved. They just want to go there and be like, hey, yeah, we got it. And we want to put it on, you know, YouTube or Facebook or TikTok or, you know, and it is a big disconnect now. You see there's a lot of people that are retiring from the field because they're tired of all the fakeness and all the drama and things that are going on in different areas. And people have to get back to how it was years ago before the shows. You know, I tell people that,
a statement there right from my sister from another Mr. Beth Allen. Many teams or people are not equipped to deal with certain situations. Also, don't get her started on charging people to help them. You have to want to help humanity to make a difference. You know, thank you, right. Beth, Miss Parathug. I love you, but she's right. Your take on that?
Yeah, I've done. I don't even know anymore. I always say I've done close to, if not more than 1,000 residential cases, and I have never ever charged anybody a cent. You know, there are teams. There are teams that will charge for like some expenses, travel expenses or something. If you want to do that, I don't have a problem with it because we all have to get places, you know. We all don't have a lot of money with that. And that's fine. I don't particularly do it. People have donated to us and we accept donations, but it doesn't have any, you know, effect on their case. We don't care if you give us something or not, or it's a dollar. It doesn't matter. We're there to help you. We don't care.
I've only had one case. That was approximately 8 hours from where my team and I live. And I remember the client actually offered to not only pay for our gas, but also paid for our hotel and insisted on it. In other words, if I would have said, no, we got this, she would have pretty much sent us to hell and, you know, cursed us out and everything. But this was a case that came straight from the man, the boss, you know, the godfather of the paranormal, John Zaffis.
Right.
And she insisted that she pay for this. So we went ahead and we went along with it. She paid for the gas. She paid for the hotel stay. We were there for 2 nights, 3 days.
Right.
That was one of the most hair-raising cases. In fact, I lost all my hair because of it. Because it was demonic. It was the first case that my team had actually taken on as a demonic case. I had already been involved in demonic cases myself as a demonologist for the church. And this was before Bishop Long.
Right.
I was more worried about my team than anything else. And what was going on in this situation, I felt like we walked into a trap. We didn't get paid as you know, what Beth is referring to here,
right?
To do what we were doing, we didn't have our food paid for or anything. We actually brought our own food. We even had our own money to pay for our own food, and we took our own breaks and whatnot. But we were there literally round the clock. Of course, we needed breaks, and we'd go to the hotel, we'd sleep, and then we'd all wake up and go back.
Right.
But I understand when it's a long trip, when it's like 2, 3, 4 hours away, that's not a big deal.
Yeah.
We were talking 8 hours away. Yeah. I can understand that. But people that charge, that I've seen people with websites where they literally have a chart and they charge for this service and this service and this. And I'm like, no. That is, in my opinion, unethical, and it should never be allowed. And unfortunately, there's way too many teams out there that do this on a regular basis. Have you come across teams like this?
A lot. We had a case where, I'm not going to say names. Definitely not going to say names. But
of course,
we know the person paid $650 for a deliverance from this known person.
Excuse me? I was taking a drink when you said that. Yes. How much?
$650. And it was a person who doesn't have $650. You know what I mean? And they're still coming to us with a problem because they didn't need that deliverance.
Here, Beth is saying, I recently got a call from someone that was charged $1,000 for a house cleansing. Mm. They were told they had a demon in their house with no investigation even done. It was a 30-minute drive. She was livid. I would be too. $1,000? I almost choked on 600. What was it? 650?
Yeah. Yeah.
And she just said 1,000. I should be having a heart attack, with all due respect. That is.
Yeah. It is crazy. I mean, I tell people, when I'm lecturing with things and we're talking about stuff like this, I explain to them. I said, because some people ask me, why don't you charge? Because like any, you want to say profession, it's your time, it's your everything you're doing, but it's different. We're working on a pseudoscience that does not have 100% proof. So correct. I could come in your house, and this is what I always say, and I could tell you, holy crap, you have a demon. It's going to kill the whole family. We can get rid of it for $15,000. And you know what? Somebody's going to pay that to save their family. It's not ethical.
It's unethical. We're coming to a close real quick. It's amazing how an hour and a half goes past us so quickly. How can people reach you if they want to have an investigation where they're not going to be charged $645?
we charge $9.95
an hour. Okay, so
For me personally, my website is my name, BillSlevin.com. For my team, if you want to contact us for help, it's PERSFL.com or Paranormal Existence Research Society.com. That's a lot to spell out, but both of them go there. The Warrens is WarrenLegacy.com. If you keep up with us on Facebook or the websites, we're always posting where we are, any kind of events we're doing. When I have my book coming out, all that stuff, we always try to post it and keep it going on podcast, everything.
We also have the Psychic Fair coming up October 19th, if I'm not mistaken.
I think that's the date. Yeah, in Vermont. Proctor, in Vermont, at Wilson Castle.
At the Wilson Castle.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Bill and I are going to be there. A great group.
So many people just like you that I've known for a while but never met in person.
And we all finally get to meet, and I hope we get to meet while I'm in Florida, because I'll be heading back in April. But, we're going to also post, links.
Yeah.
Bill already is. I've been posting the link to this event coming up in Vermont, October 19th. I believe it's 2 days, but they're only posting one date.
They changed it slightly. I think Friday there's a special VIP investigation, and then Saturday is the psychic fair and
Sunday
the ball at night. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Oh, okay. So it's a 3-day event, really, but we'll be posting that. I'm sure you'll be able to find it on Bill's page.
Yep.
And on my page, either Greetings from Beyond Radio or on whatever page you're following me on as well. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an honor to have Bill Slevin on my show. I hope everyone has learned something. And I know that we've all learned from you. Good God, $1,000 for a cleansing? Oh, my goodness. And $650. This is insane. we need to be the hey, you know,
we're doing something wrong.
We're doing something wrong, or we should be the frauds. But you know what?
Right.
I'm old school and I can't do it. So I'm sorry. I can't go there. But you know what? This is what I like about the show, where not only are we learning from you, Bill, who happens to be our guest on the show, but also at the same time, we're learning from everybody in the chat room. And that's really what's important about all of this. Thank you so much, Bill, for being on the show.
Thanks for having me. We will
definitely have you back. Especially, I think there's going to be a special show coming up, not on mine, for everyone
tomorrow.
Involved. Tomorrow. Is it tomorrow? I may have to make a sneak, you know, little peek in there and say, hi, I'm here. I'll let her know.
Yeah, there's a bunch of us that are, I think, going to be on there talking about the event, I guess.
Okay. I'll reach out to her, or maybe you can reach out to her and tell her, hey, Rich may be open tomorrow anyways, because the plans have changed. So,
okay.
You know, sure. Thank you very much, Bill, for being on the show. We will definitely have you back. All right. Thank you
anytime.
So much. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's Bill Slevin for you, and hopefully we've all learned something new. If someone tries to charge you for a cleansing or removal of a demon that we don't even know for sure is even there, do yourself a favor and run the other way, or this way, or that way. But don't go towards it, because you really don't need it. Anyone that charges, they have no conscience, and quite frankly, they shouldn't even be representing the paranormal, or they shouldn't even be involved when it comes to clergy and anything that comes with God. In my opinion, those people are going to have to answer to God and something else called karma. So remember that. So before I let you go, as I state before I leave everyone and go bye-bye until the next show, is live life. Don't let life live you. And peace be still. See you next time.